Beloved listeners, had I been live to air rather than being lazy on the 29th of December, I would have played the drums lowly and played the fife slowly or something like that, and lowered our flags to half-mast, because it was a sad day for Hollywood. On that day, the world's most famous and probably oldest chimpanzee died. I refer, of course, to Cheetah. Tarzans came and went, but Cheetah lived till 80, which is remarkable. Apparently he died in a primate sanctuary in Florida, which is where elderly people go to die, of course, and I will miss him. Now, what the hell has that got to do with this program? Well, it's just that I've been thinking about Hollywood animals, and on this occasion, we're going to talk about the biggest star, the biggest animal star that Hollywood ever had. And the story begins on a French battlefield in 1918 when a young Californian serviceman, Corporal Lee Duncan, came across a bombed-out kennel, and he discovered at least 20 dogs killed by artillery shells. But in the corner, he found something that had changed his life forever, a German shepherd bitch with her litter of young puppies. Smitten, Duncan kept two, gave the others away, and managed to keep his with him during the war, even got them back to the US. Now, one of the puppies died, but the other's name was to become synonymous with animal thespianism, Rin Tin Tin, and Duncan devoted every waking moment to training Rinty, who could climb trees, scale 12-foot fences, and conduct full symphony orchestras. By 1922, he was the first dog star of a silent film. Our old friend Susan Orlean, staff writer with New Yorker magazine, has, who you will recall, wrote the acclaimed book The Orchid Thief, later turned into a movie. Her new effort is Rin Tin Tin, the life and legend of the world's most famous dog. She joins me now from California. Woof, woof, Susan.
I guess I should say woof, woof back to you. It's great to be with you.
You've made my tail wag. Now, how far back does your interest in Rin Tin Tin go?
The television show had come on the air before I was even born. But as far as I could remember, ever since I was able to form memories and have really avid emotions, I somehow knew of Rin Tin Tin and I wanted a dog just like him.
And of course, these days there's the incarnation of Inspector Rex, but he's nothing compared to Rinty. I like it. I'm going to quote you to you. I began to feel myself getting a little unhinged, launching into arguments whenever anyone made a comment equating Rin Tin Tin with Lassie, as they always do. I mean, for heaven's sake, are people entirely ignorant?
You know, it was something that my husband at one point said to me, stop being so argumentative. People don't know. But it was, I took great affront at it because I loved Lassie when I was a kid, but Lassie was a character who, in a book, who became a movie and then a TV character. Rin Tin Tin had a real life, and he had this enormous career as a silent film star beginning in the 1920s. So he had a kind of breadth and an acclaim that was really entirely different from Lassie. And he became famous in part in the 1920s because he really was a great actor, and people looked at him not as a dog who just was a companion in a show, but as a real thespian.
I've made a couple of dozen feature films over the years, and I have to say he's a much better actor than many of the humans I employed. Now, let's talk about that the Californian corporal, because there's something terribly poignant about his devotion to dogs, because as a single mum, two young kids, his mother left them in an orphanage. And you reckon the only companion in his loneliness he would ever find was his dog.
I do think that that's part and a very large part of the dynamics that went into the whole Rin Tin Tin story. Lee Duncan had a kind of classic, lonely ranch childhood, living on thousands and thousands of acres. At that point, I think his character was really formed. He was somebody who never really had the capacity to be very close to people, but he had an unlimited capacity for bonding with animals.
I like the fact that you talk about him getting married for a while to a horse trainer, but he still spent all his time with his dog. Now, let's put Rinty into the context of animals in World War One. You found out that over 16 million animals were deployed during the war, all sorts of reasons. An infinite number of horses, but also camels and mules, homing pigeons, oxen dragging heavy equipment wagons. What did the dogs do?
Dogs in the war did a whole range of things. They were sentries. They carried messages from troops to other troops. They laid communication wires. They carried first aid equipment around to distribute to soldiers on a battlefield. The dogs that were known as cadaver dogs would be released into a battlefield once the fighting had stopped to indicate to the medics which soldiers were still alive, so the medics could get to them quickly. They were comfort. They were sent around to the soldiers who were injured with enough first aid equipment that if the soldier was able to take care of himself, he could have supplies. And if he were dying, the dog would stay with him until he died. Probably the most popular dogs among the troops were the cigarette dogs, and they were usually little terriers who were outfitted with packs that had dozens of packs of cigarettes, and they would wander among the troops basically giving them cigarettes. And I have a feeling they were greeted with great enthusiasm.
Yeah,
so the dogs really did just about every role a soldier could do, and then many that soldiers couldn't do.
I'm wagging my tail because I'm talking to Susan Orlean, and via Skype, I should point out, about Rin Tin Tin, published by Atlantic Books, distributed by Allen and Unwin. Let's move the story on a little. Miraculously, he gets Rinty home to America, and then he gets the idea that he ought to be a film star. He writes a screenplay starring Rinty. Does he hawk it around the studios?
He did what every hopeful did at that point in Hollywood history. And, you know, remember, this was Hollywood in its very early days when it was possible to walk up and down Sunset Boulevard and knock on doors and say, I'm here with my very talented dog and my wonderful screenplay. Would you be interested? And some of the time, people said yes. So Lee Duncan had written a screenplay based on an old Scottish folktale about Prince Llewellyn. And he wrote it starring Rin Tin Tin. And he took the dog, who he had spent every waking hour training, and the dog was remarkably trainable and extremely athletic. He had cleared a fence of 11 feet in a dog show, which was his first moment caught on film, and Lee realized that the dog was something quite special.
Well, little wonder he got his paw in the door at Warner Brothers. But I'm fascinated by Duncan's conviction that Rinty could be taught to really act, not just to carry a story through action, but to register emotions and portray a real character with its individual loves, loyalties, and hates.
And he did. He believed that the dog would be able to not just do tricks on camera, which he was certainly capable of doing, but that he could be a leading man. And he was a leading man in his movies. He had a character that evolved and had a narrative arc, and he had to show, for instance, in my favorite of his early films, Clash of the Wolves, he has a moment where he's going to commit suicide, and he limps along and is so miserable. And watching that scene, as I've done many times, it's an amazing acting performance.
Yeah.
He suffers. And in fact, people were so concerned, because in this scene, he's injured and he's going to commit suicide because he feels he's playing a half wolf, half dog, and he's sure that the other wolves in his pack will kill him because they know he's injured. And he decides instead he's going to commit suicide and spare his wife the horror of his death.
You've got the entire audience in tears. Please.
I know.
They're sobbing across Australia.
It's a very, very moving scene. So much so that Lee, after the movie came out, had to take the dog around in public to show people that he wasn't injured. he really was okay, because people couldn't believe that he wasn't, lame and miserable and about to throw himself off a cliff.
Well, the way Duncan trained him was fascinating. The reward wasn't food or excessive praise, but he got to play with a squeaky rubber doll, which he loved since he was a pup.
It's a kind of remarkable thing, because he really didn't believe in bribing the dog. He believed that the dog needed to be treated with respect, and that the entire training process was just a matter of educating him and bonding with him. So he didn't give him, and I'm so ashamed, because the only way I can get my dog to do anything is with food. But Lee never, ever gave him food as a reward. He just would let him play with the little doll for a few minutes. He would take it away. And again, when he asked the dog to do something, he would again present the toy as his reward.
This is wonderful stuff. I should point out that Greta Garbo, Harlow, and the Kellogg of Cornflakes fame all owned little Rin Tin Tin descendants, but that none of Rinty's pups really made it in Duncan's view. They didn't have a star quality.
You know, it was a fascinating thing. Lee was so convinced that Rin Tin Tin would somehow live forever that he simply refused or was unable to prepare a successor. So even though Rin Tin Tin was 12 years old at the time that he died, and, you know, we all know that that's in the
getting
very twilight
a
of a dog, you would assume that a person who had made his entire career out of having this dog perform would have kept a number of the puppies, trained them, you know, found the best one, gotten him ready. He didn't. He only had a few puppies at the time Rin Tin Tin died, and none of them were trained, and none of them were even old enough, really, to perform well. He plucked one out of that small group and presented him to the public as Rin Tin Tin Jr., the prepared, perfectly trained successor to his father, but he wasn't.
Well, let the record show that Dad made 23 silent films. He was considered for an Academy Award one year. He got a Patsy Award instead. Would you tell us who hosted the Patsy Award ceremony?
None other than Ronald Reagan, who, you know, at that time was a young actor and a kind of a favorite of Hollywood, and he turned over the Patsy with great pride, not only to Rin Tin Tin, but also to Francis the Mule, who
Didn't have it in my. I don't buy Francis. He comes a bad third to Cheetah. But there was also, I believe, the co-host for Ronnie was Roy Rogers' horse Trigger. Dear, oh dear, what a story! The television show we talked about, and we used the theme, was one of the most popular in the world.
it was an immediate success, not only in the United States, but literally all over the world. I had the great pleasure of digging up the spreadsheets from Screen Gems showing what the royalties were that they were getting from different countries. And it was everywhere, and it was a huge success in just about every corner of the earth. And again, after his great success in the 1920s in silent film, Rin Tin Tin was once again internationally known.
Mm. There's a lovely piece here which, with an observer describing the technique. He said, Duncan scarcely touched him during the entire proceeding, stood about 8 feet away, simply gave directions, and it took your breath away to watch that dog respond, his ears up, unless told to put them down, and his eyes glued on his master. That's a very vivid account, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really, it's very touching to read people's description of the relationship between Lee and Rin Tin Tin. I mean, they had a kind of connection that I think was very special, and it was not that Lee thought Rin Tin Tin was a person. He didn't. He knew he was a dog. He admired him for his dog qualities, but they just were connected. And of course, when Rin Tin Tin died, I can't imagine what it was like for Lee. I think his whole world was that dog, and not only his emotional world, but obviously his professional world.
Susan, thanks to you, they both live again, and it's lovely to talk to you. Susan Orlin, her book Rin Tin Tin, published by Atlantic Books, distributed here by Allen & Unwin. Read it, and it'll make your nose go wet with delight. On our next, don't miss the first of our forums recorded at the Perth Writers' Festival. This one, a timely little number on the current scene in Australian politics with George Megalogenis, Andrew Robb, and Susan Mitchell. That's it for now. Stay with RN, and see you later.